Welcome to the Forency Podcast. Forency.us is a language training website for Hebrew, Arabic, and Russian designed specifically for intermediate to advanced learners. Our daily lessons prepare you to read real foreign language news articles and listen to actual foreign language media on a wide variety of subjects to put you on the path to language mastery. If you're studying Hebrew, Arabic, or Russian, you can visit our site at forency.us. That's foreignc.us. And enter the promo code Language Mastery for a 10% discount on our annual and 6-month subscriptions.
In this episode of the podcast, I had the pleasure of speaking again with Dr. Jonas Siboni, who's a professor of modern Hebrew at the University of Strasbourg and a Semitic languages expert. In this episode, we talked about a recent lecture he gave on Moroccan Arabic's influence on modern Hebrew spoken in Israel. And to demonstrate his point, he analyzes different dialogues and scenes from an Israeli show called Zaguri Imperia, which follows a Moroccan Israeli family. And he looks at the way that different characters in the show speak, how they mix Arabic and Hebrew together, and specifically Moroccan Arabic. And he analyzes and breaks down how exactly we can pinpoint that this is Moroccan Arabic that they're speaking and not Palestinian or Arabic from other areas of the Middle East that Jews came from when they immigrated to Israel. In addition to analyzing and looking at the different dialogues and scenes in the show, we also talk about how the Moroccan community developed as they immigrated to Israel and how they were pushed to the social and economic peripheries and how that forced their form of Hebrew to develop on its own in a very unique way. I hope you enjoy the show. I'm here today with Dr. Jonas Siboni, who's a professor of modern Hebrew at the University of Strasbourg and an expert in Semitics or Semitic languages. Thanks for joining me again.
Thank you very much for having me once more.
So last time we spoke, we focused on blessings and curses in Judeo-Arabic dialects of North Africa.
Exactly.
And today we're going to be talking about a kind of related topic, Moroccan Arabic's influence on modern Hebrew, or is it more correct to say Moroccan Judeo-Arabic's influence on modern Hebrew?
That's one of the questions, one of the interesting questions, actually. Both are accurate.
So when we're talking about Moroccan Arabic, are we talking about Arabic spoken by Jews of Moroccan descent living in Israel or something else?
Actually, we are talking about Moroccan Arabic as it was spoken by Jews in Morocco and in Israel after when they arrived in Israel. So that's sometimes with some specificities connected to the Jewish dialects, and sometimes it's just Moroccan Arabic. So the influence is from the ancient inhabitants of Morocco and the second generations and third generations in Israel nowadays.
And when did they arrive in Israel? When were those first Aliyot?
Actually, it started in the 50s. One of the most important Aliyot was in the 50s and the 60s. So today, some of the inhabitants of the neighborhoods of the peripheries of the state of Israel were born in Morocco. They used to speak Moroccan Arabic in Morocco, but some of them are second generations and third and even fourth generations. So there's various and different profiles.
And explain to me a little bit about what happened when those Jews from Morocco immigrated to Israel.
There's actually a very interesting, a very good article that was published in 2011 from Ronnie Henkin, which is an Israeli researcher. The article is called Hebrew and Arabic in Asymmetric Contact in Israel. And she speaks about the newly arrived North Africans, especially Moroccans, which is the largest community, what we call Aida in Israeli Hebrew. Mm-hmm. This is supposed to be the largest community in Israel, and they were relegated to the geographical, economical, and social peripheries. That's one of the main reasons why we want to call that social leg, the way they speak Hebrew. We call it sometimes peripheral Hebrew.
And we also call it Mizrahi Hebrew, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what one of the interesting debates about how should we call it. If we just say Mizrahi, there's a problem because it's an ethnic criteria. That's not entirely a mistake to call it that way, because as we just said, the Moroccan and to larger part, every Oriental Jews, that's how we call them. That's the most important part of the inhabitants of those neighborhoods. So indeed, the most important influence is from their native languages. But it's not only Mizrahi inhabitants that speak that way. So that's a problem of the denomination. That's why I think I prefer peripheral Hebrew. Even if there's always another problem if you want to categorize the way we call stuff, because now it's true even for people not living in those neighborhoods that they just started to speak that way too. There's an influence of the sociolect.
So when we're talking about peripheral Hebrew, are we just referring to Moroccans, or are we also talking about Jews who came from Iraq and Lebanon and Syria?
We're talking about people living in this in those neighborhoods today. So a large part is from Moroccan origins, but from as you say, from other countries, from Ethiopia, Russia, and Palestinian Arabs too. So that's why it's difficult to give it a name. It's just I think the peripheral choice is the best one.
And before we go any further in that, if you could just explain why that happened, how come they were pushed to the social and economic peripheries?
There's plenty of reasons. I'm not sure I'm qualified to answer to that question. It's history of immigration. So it's hard to say. First of all, those new immigrants came sometimes 10, 20, or 30 years after the other ones. So they were not the ones to organize where they would be sent to. Some say, and I think it could be correct, but that there is obviously a racial question behind that. Like to send the Orientals to the new cities and to the borders. But that's another topic. I'm not sure I'm qualified.
Sure. And did Moroccans who immigrated to Israel, did they hold on to their Moroccan identity more so than Jews from other parts of the Middle East?
Yeah, maybe more from some other ones. And it's not very easy to explain why. Maybe it's because it's the most important one. And when they got to this new society, they re-identified themselves as Moroccans. And they were, even if in Morocco there were the Jews, and now in Israel they're the Moroccans. They're the most important community. So maybe that's the reason why the Moroccan-ness is so important there. The other possible answer to that question is that their life in Morocco was maybe better than for other communities in other countries. So they're very attached to, connected. They stay connected to the country, to the language sometimes, and to the concepts and lots of stuff.
Interesting. And is that happening at all now in modern times? Like, do we see that happen with the Ethiopian communities or the Russian communities or even the French communities coming to Israel? Do we see them developing their own form of Hebrew?
I'm not sure because I really think that it's more of a social thing, even if we understand that where it comes from. The Russians, of course, there's an influence of their mother language to how they speak Hebrew, but sometimes even the Russians, even the Ethiopians, can use Moroccan words or Moroccan expressions without even being aware of that. I'm not sure it's true the other way. Maybe with the Russians, yeah, because it was a huge immigration too.
Right. So I believe you wrote a paper on this topic of Moroccan Arabic's influence on modern Hebrew. And then in a presentation or a lecture you gave recently, you focused on an Israeli TV show called Zaghouri Imperia.
Exactly.
That was launched in 2014. I think it went on for 2 seasons. So tell me a little bit about the premise of that show and why you chose it.
I chose it because it's a part of a wider research, and I just had to find an example, interesting, mm-hmm. and maybe a funny one, a funny example of to speak about this topic. And I was actually watching the show, so I had that in mind, mm-hmm. and I was thinking when I watched the show that it would be interesting to show how it was used. Because this situation is, even lots of Israelis are aware of that situation, even if they don't really know how to explain it, or they're not linguists, or they can feel that there's a special way a Moroccan speak, or even the inhabitants of those neighborhoods. And I thought that was funny, first because of that, and two, because I think it was made in a very special way, because it's a fiction. So, of course, some aspects were obviously exaggerated, and that was interesting to explain how and why.
And the show follows a Israeli family of Moroccan descent. And is the father and the mother their first generation? Are they immigrated from Morocco in the show? Or are they first generation Israelis?
In the show, they were born in Morocco. Actually, that's interesting because the father of the family, which is called Albert, with the French name, is maybe the only one, the actor of who plays this role. Maybe he's the only one who was really born in Morocco and who really speaks Moroccan. And as you can hear that in the examples and in the sentences and the words that he uses. The mother in the show is supposed to be born in Morocco too, but she's obviously not a speaker. The actress is obviously not a real speaker of Moroccan Arabic. And there are 8 children, 5 boys and 3 girls, were born in Israel in the show and in real life.
And when you're watching the children in the show, how they speak, do they have a less exaggerated, or do they use the Moroccan Arabic less, but they still integrate it into modern Hebrew, or is it the same as how the parents speak?
That's not the same. The father says entire sentences in Arabic, in Moroccan Arabic, and the children and for the wife, it's only a few words with a thick Israeli accent. You can hear that immediately. There's the grandmother of the family. That's funny too, because she has a good accent when she tries to speak Moroccan Arabic, but it's exaggerated too. She uses some sounds as ayn and ha, where it's not supposed to be there. Mm-hmm. And on my research, I saw on her biography that she's not Moroccan at all. She has Polish origins, but she's a good actor, actually.
That's funny. And I want us to just dive into some of the expressions they use in the show and then break them down piece by piece to examine what exactly is coming from Arabic, what's coming from Hebrew, and what's coming from Judeo-Arabic. Because I think there's a couple examples of that also.
Yeah, there are plenty of examples of exactly about that. First of all, sometimes it's Hebrew, but even the speakers think it's Arabic. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they think it's Hebrew, but it's Arabic. Sometimes they think it's Moroccan, but it's not Moroccan Arabic, it's Palestinian Arabic. And it is quite hard to be sure about the origins of a word when it's in Arabic into a Hebrew sentence, because Hebrew has experienced years and decades and even centuries of Arabic influence. So Arabic words in Hebrew, it does exist since the Middle Ages. Mm-hmm. About the words they use, for example, they say a lot that word, madroub, and they pronounce it like that, madroub, which is obviously in Arabic, in almost every variety of Arabic you can hear that, but in Arabic it's supposed to be pronounced madroub.
Which means like to be hit, or it's
exactly
crazy, or like something's off with somebody?
That's exactly the two meanings of the word. The first one is the passive participle of daraba, for daraba, which means to hit. So, yeah, to be madrub is to be hit by something. But the expression, as you said, means to be crazy. So, for example, it's hard to know where they have it from. You can hear that a lot in Israel, not only among the Moroccan community, but you hear that a lot in the Ivrit Shel HaPeripheria, as we call it in Hebrew, the peripheral Hebrew. That's interesting about that example, because there is a way to know where it's from if you focus on the pronunciation. Mm-hmm. If people say madroub with this Israeli accent, actually it's typical Israeli. Dod of Arabic is d, like non-pharyngealized, as it's supposed to be in Arabic. The r is not rolled, so madroub becomes madroub. Mm-hmm. And the vowels, regarding the vowels, it's what Israeli Hebrew has to offer. A and u is very Israeli. But in Morocco, you're not supposed to say madroub, but mdrob. So there's a difference. And if you hear people say madroub or madroub, it's more likely to come from Palestinian Arabic. But it could be more complicated too if you think about the fact that Israeli speakers are influenced by this Palestinian verbal stem in maf'ul, which is the
passive participle. Right.
As in words, you can hear a lot, and every Israeli knows them as majnoon, majnoon, crazy, ma'roof, famous, mastool, stone, or even names like Mahmoud. Maybe that's why, even if it comes from Moroccan Arabic, maybe just hear madroob and think about that and reanalyze it as they're used to with the Palestinian stem. So it's hard to say.
Because the Palestinian stem is also infiltrated the modern Hebrew in a way, right? When people say mastul, like it's like you're high. Like
exactly. High, right? Yeah. Exactly. So it's hard to say. For other words, marbun, which means crazy too, but sometimes means frustrated, to be frustrated about something. Right. Marbun.
Marbun, does that come from like rabbi, like to be hidden, like rabbi? Or is that?
I don't think so. I'm not sure actually where it's from. I know how it's used in Morocco. And marbun, you can say marbuna to girl, which means it's an insult. It means if you're frustrated. Mm-hmm. I heard that most Israelis pronounce it differently from madroub. So I thought that it could be more Moroccan. So I asked a Palestinian contact who told me she was not sure that it doesn't even exist in Palestinian. And for her, it was obviously Moroccan. So sometimes you can just check asking people if they hear it in their community. But if you just see like that the Moroccan Jews in Israel use madroub and marbun, looks right. Like the same.
So I want to look at the sentence that I think the mom says when she uses madroub, but she says, and correct me if I'm wrong, she says, maze madrubim, right? So the maze is Hebrew, like what is, right?
Yeah.
And then she says madroub, which is what we just talked about. But then she adds in for the ending, she says im instead of in.
Yeah, that's correct. There's the Hebrew plural suffix at the end, madroub, madrubim, madrubot. So when you see stuff like that, it means that it's really integrated to the new language. Exactly.
And you see that a lot with Arabic that's been adopted into Hebrew, where they'll add in the im ending instead of the in.
Yeah, and it happened. That's funny because it happened too in Moroccan Jewish Arabic with Hebrew words the other way around. Mm-hmm. Hebrew words with the Arabic plural forms sometimes at the end, like. I'm trying to find an example. I'm sorry.
No, no problem. If it comes to you, let me know.
Yeah.
I also wanted to look at another sentence and ask you about it. So the dad says, and correct my pronunciation if I'm not getting it how the dad says in the show, but he says, Kham al hayeled, right? Or does he say Kham al hayeled?
That's the mother. She says, with the Israeli pronunciation, Kham al hayeled. Yeah, so the preposition is the Hebrew one. In Moroccan Arabic, it would be haram ala. We would hear something slightly different. Mm-hmm. That's interesting, yes, because the structure of the sentence is Arabic. We say in Moroccan Arabic, haram alik, which means that's bad what you did. Like, it's a sin, haram alik, on you. But so they kept the same preposition, the same one, the cognate, the Hebrew cognates, from ala to al, and she pronounces it with this Israeli accent.
And just another question, it's not totally related, but the Hebrew verb lachrim, to boycott, does that come from Hebrew, or did they take that from haram, from Arabic?
No, it's from Hebrew. It's a cognate. It's lachrim, which is, I think, modern verb, comes from cherem in ancient Hebrew. It meant to ban something.
So that's one of those ancient roots that's in the Middle East that's always been around. Yeah. It never really went away from the language.
Exactly. But that's a good example of why it's sometimes hard to say if it was borrowed from any other Semitic language or if it's just common ancestors.
Right. And then, so he says, al hayeled and not ala.
Yeah.
So like al is the Hebrew preposition for like on.
Exactly.
And then in Arabic it's
al. Also, we can say ala or sometimes al too, but in that example, it sounds really Hebrew.
Mm-hmm.
And it's followed by the Hebrew article ha, and yeah, the Hebrew word.
So if we're going to go to another example, the sister at one point says, so again, she mixes Hebrew and Arabic, and she says, she's talking about somebody, a guy, and she says, tamid ahav shufuni, correct?
Yeah.
So tamid means, you can just break that down for me.
Tamid ahav is in Hebrew. It means always. Tamid is always. Ahav is he liked. And shufuni is in Arabic.
Right.
That's a tough one because, first of all, shufuni is now entirely Hebrew slang. You can hear that anywhere, not only in among the Moroccan community or even not only in the peripheries. When I did my presentation last month in Paris, one of my colleagues came to see me afterwards, and she told me that she was not Moroccan at all, that she grew up, she didn't grow up in those neighborhoods at all, and she always used that and she didn't even know that it was Arabic. So it's really in Hebrew today, and it has to be considered as a Hebrew word. But it's obviously Arabic. Shuf means look, in Arabic, imperative form. Shufi is the feminine form and Shufu is the plural form. Shufuni is look at me. I think it comes from Morocco because it's very famous in the Arab world, but usually people say Shufuni Yanes, and Yanes is the second part of the expression. Shufuni is considered short for Shufuni Yanes. That's my experience. Maybe I'm mistaken, but I heard Shufuni alone only in Morocco. And I even asked another friend, which is a native Algerian Arabic speaker. And he told me he never heard that, Shufuni. Shufuni Yanes, of course, just Shufuni, not at all. But once more, when I did my presentation, another colleague came to see me and told me that maybe that it could be from somewhere else too. That's just then a hypothesis.
So to break down Shufuni, so Shufuni is the expression no matter what, even if I'm talking. So like, if I would think when I say like Yanes Shufuni, it's saying like the people will see me, but mm-hmm. I can say Shufuni even if I'm referring to like he likes when people look at him, like he likes getting the attention. So I would say like in Hebrew, Hutamidahav, and then I still say Shufuni, even though it's like the ni refers to me, correct?
Yeah, that's a set phrase. It's frozen. People don't hear that when they say. For the Israeli speakers, it just became a concept. It mm-hmm. means to show off. He is a shufuni. That's how people use that.
And then another thing that we'll get into, and you talk about in your lecture, is how so the verb in Arabic shaf yashuf to see. It's prevalent in the Levant, and is it prevalent in North Africa too?
Yeah.
So, but in Hebrew, in the Arabic spoken by the Jews in Morocco, they didn't use shaf yashuf as much, correct?
They did use that, but the specificity of Moroccan Jews, actually, it's just in Morocco, is that they use the other verb too, the one that has disappeared, almost disappeared from the other Arabic dialects of in North Africa, which is ra, and ra is the same as in Hebrew and in classical Arabic too. There is a question about shaf yashuf because I don't think that you can find it in the Quran. Maybe the fifth form, tashawwafa. But like that, shaf yashuf, I'm not sure. Should check that. But I think...
So I don't really know where that came from?
It comes from ancient Arabic. But the fact that you can hear that in Morocco and in Palestine, for example, means that it's pretty old. But right. We don't know exactly... how it was used before. And that's a specificity of the Jews in Morocco, is that they kept the other one, ra, to see.
Right.
For the other Moroccan speakers, it's usually you can hear ra only in the proverbs or set phrases.
Right. Or in fusha.
And fusha, of course. Right. Yeah.
Even though usually on the news, they still, I think, would say like shaf yashuf, or it's very common to hear it now.
Yeah.
So ra yara, like to see, and it comes from the same root in Hebrew, right? Lirot, to see.
Yeah, exactly. Ra. Yeah, it's the same one.
And then the dad in the show, you're gonna have to help me with the sentence that he says, but he says Trah Lbeb Utrah.
Utrah Shachi. Yeah. That's Hil Elbeb, open the door, tra, you see. So that's an example of how it's used. It wouldn't be used like that in today's Moroccan Arabic. Utra eshhad shi, and see what that is. Like, open the door and see who that is. And that's translated afterwards in Hebrew in the show. Tiftach ta delet v'tireh mi ba, tireh ma zeh. I don't remember how he says that. I think that's one of the focuses made on purpose, to use those sentences with this very specific verb to emphasize the fact that it comes from a Jewish dialect.
Right. So the fact that he says trah, like he says trah, not shuf.
Yeah, I think that's made on purpose. And that was on the pilot of the series, and I had a few examples of things I think he did on purpose. Mm-hmm. Like the pronunciation, he did insist on the pronunciation of some consonants as to say zuz, to say two, for example. Or he says, the father says, bslama alik instead of bslama alik.
So let's go back to both of those. So, because I don't speak the North African dialect, I'm familiar with Syrian and Lebanese and Palestinian dialect, but okay. When we're counting, right, we'd say wahed nint let.
Yeah.
But in so, now tell me, give me a North Africa lesson on how somebody would count to four in normal North African dialect, and then tell me what the dad does.
So wahed is the same one. Wahed, zhuj, tleta, raba. Would be like that.
So where does zhuj come from?
Zhuj, there's an interesting debate about the origins of zhuj. Actually, it's zhuj. It says in Hebrew, zug. Zubu, which means a couple in Hebrew. It could be from Greek, actually. The real let's say it like that, the ancient word for two is shnaim, isnain, as we hear in Hebrew and Arabic. So maybe in North Africa, people just said one pair, three, four. That's how it happened.
I'm surprised I didn't make the connection between Zug and Zuj.
Yeah.
So is Zug found in biblical Hebrew? Is it found in ancient Hebrew?
Yeah. Yeah. It's in, I think it is. Maybe I'm mistaken. In Arabic, actually, there's a verb, Zawajata, Zawaja, which means to be married.
Right.
In Moroccan Arabic, you say Mzuwaj, meaning I'm married, Ranim Mzuwaj. I was made as a pair.
Right.
That's more or less.
That's one of the most fascinating things I think about studying both languages and how, unless you're really looking at it and analyzing and breaking it down, you don't make, at least for me, I don't make those connections until I look at it afterwards. And then you say, like, oh, of course, like it's right there in front of your eyes, but you don't see it. You don't hear it.
That's because it's language. It's alive. So you just speak it. And to identify those stuff, you have to focus on something else.
So the normal Moroccans would say Zouj with a J, like almost a J sound. And then what separates the dad as being as speaking the Jewish Arabic dialect?
I'm sorry?
The dad, he says something specific to the Moroccan Jewish dialect, correct? He doesn't pronounce it.
He says Zouj.
He says Zouj.
Yeah, but it's a very contextual thing. In other places, it wouldn't be just the Jews. For example, in Tripoli Arabic in Libya, everyone says Zouj, so that's the way people say it. In Algeria or even Morocco, in other places, some people say Zouj, Jouz, or Jouj. And the thing is that the Jews in Jews would be close to that too, from in northern Morocco have this very special accent. It's hard for them to pronounce sh and je. So instead they say je and sh. So in words like that, it's obvious. But for example, instead of saying nemshi, we say nemshi. And you can hear that in Israeli Hebrew too, with when they have this Jewish Moroccan accent. Instead of saying anishomea, for example, people say anishomea. So they obviously have the same accent.
Right, really like slight differences, but that... better indicators.
Yeah, it's not much. It's not a huge problem for understanding, but you hear it immediately.
And is that the same when we're talking about like the verb to drink, shurub?
Yeah, shurub, you know, more Jewish Arabic.
So, and to go back to what the one you said at the beginning, he doesn't say salam alaik. He says
salam alaik.
So it's she.
It's between se and she. So some people really say shlama, some others really say slama, and sometimes shlama.
And that's unique to the Jewish community.
Yeah, to some neighborhoods, actually. So even in Morocco today, if you speak like that, people would think that you're a Jew. But if you search a little bit more about Arabic dialects, you will see that it's not only the Jews, it's some specific groups maybe that kept another way, an old way to speak Arabic. In the city of Fez, for example, it's not only the Jews, it's every elderly people speaks like that. In Meknes, it's the women speak like that.
Interesting. Because the first connection I would make, so like for people who don't know, when you say salam alaik, it's like, peace be upon you, right? Or
And
then I would make the connection when they're saying shalom alaik.
With shalom.
Shalom.
Yeah, I don't think it's
connected. That's not the case. It could just be that
because when they speak Hebrew, they have the same accent.
Right.
That was one of the theories, the ancient theories about that accent, that maybe it was confusion between Hebrew and Arabic, and then we discovered that it was not only connected to the Jews, and maybe one of the better explanations is that it comes from what happened in Spanish in the 3rd or the 14th or 15th century, when there was a huge confusion between every one of those consonants. Se, she, je. As you can hear, for example, in the Judeo-Spanish, the Jews were living in Greece and Turkey, they kept an old way to speak Spanish, and they kept important differences between se, she, je that was lost in Spain. So maybe the Jews from northern North Africa have experienced that confusion.
Right. And to look at another sentence, that's really another good example of mixing the Hebrew with Arabic and then something else. Mixing Hebrew with Arabic and then coming back to the ancient Hebrew. This is one of the most interesting ones that you point out in your lecture. You said, the mom says, she's talking about a guy and she says, Hamatzav shelo.
Hamatzav shelo.
Okay, she says, Hamatzav shelo. And then she says, Fasada?
Yeah.
So Explain to me what's going on here.
I think that's maybe that's really interesting. Actually, this word, fsara, is a total creation. Most often, Moroccan Israelis think it's because they don't really speak Moroccan Arabic with Arabs or with Muslims from Morocco. They have no idea that it's not a word everyone uses. In Morocco, there was a specific word of Jewish Arabic, of Judeo-Arabic. When people use it, even in Hebrew, in modern Hebrew, they use it a lot. It means a bad situation. So, amatzav shelo fsara means his state, his condition is fsara. Actually, fsara, it comes from the Hebrew word we pronounce today in Israeli Hebrew, tzara. It was pronounced in ancient Hebrew, tzara.
Something closer like that. With an S than a tz.
Yeah, without the T before. Mm-hmm. As in Arabic, as sod in Arabic. If you compare Hebrew and Arabic, you see tzedaka or sadiq. Tzadik, sadiq. Mm-hmm. In ancient Hebrew, it was sadiq, obviously, too. So people, even speakers of Israeli Hebrew, have the hardest time to identify it as a Hebrew word because they say fsara and they have the Hebrew word tzara. So they don't do the connection.
Right.
Actually, in the word fsara, f is the Arabic preposition.
Right.
Yeah, it's fi. It comes from fi. So in Jewish Arabic, they just took the Hebrew word sara, which means bad situation or problems, or and it was in they used it in sentences like huwa sara, huwa fi sara. He's in a bad situation, and they knew it was a Hebrew word. It was a Hebrew concept, actually. So actually, in Hebrew, it's supposed to be hu bet sara or hu bat sara. Mm-hmm. They just don't identify that it comes from ancient Hebrew. It was borrowed by the Jews in Morocco who did not really speak Hebrew, only Arabic, but they were influenced by the Hebrew sources. So they just took the concept, the Hebrew concept, they used it in Moroccan Arabic sentences. And now the new immigrants lost the Arabic language, but they kept a few words and they used that in Hebrew. Even if they think it's Moroccan Arabic, actually it's Hebrew.
And that expression, did that in Morocco, did that make its way into the wider Arabic dialect, or was it restricted to the Jewish communities?
Yeah, people don't understand it if you use that. It's really a Hebrew word.
So, Hamatzav Shalo, his situation, Fasara, is...
Yeah,
he's in a bad situation.
Right. And in another episode of the show, one of the characters even says, Hafsara Sheba Fasara, which means the Fasara that is in the Fasara. Like the worst situation ever. So for them, it's really a word. Fsara is a word. It is a word, actually. Maybe they're right, but it's an innovation. It's not Moroccan Arabic. It's Hebrew, Moroccan Arabic, Moroccan Jewish Arabic, and then modern Israeli Hebrew.
And then is there an Israeli, something similar in Israel to that they speak? They say like tzara tzura or something?
Ah, tzara tzura. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it was used too in Moroccan Arabic, in Moroccan Jewish Arabic, tzara tzura.
Interesting. Yeah. And now I want to go into a little bit of the Berber influence on on Moroccan Arabic, but also Moroccan Jewish Arabic. So there's a funeral scene in the show, and somebody uses the verb le gajder.
Yeah.
First, tell me how you spell that, and then get into what it means and how it's used.
Le gajder, it's how they pronounce it in modern Israel Hebrew. Mm-hmm. So there's the verb, ani begajder, ata megajder, gishdarti, ani agajder.
Mm-hmm. It's like the past, present.
Yeah, so that comes from Berber. Even if usually the speakers are not aware that it's not Arabic. Actually, it's not specific. It was not specific to the Jewish dialects. It's a Berber concept that you can find it in lots of varieties of Berber. In Morocco, in Algeria, in Kabyle, for example, Kabyle Berber, it's the name of the screams and shouts and tears of women during the funerals. It's a concept, agjdur. It's how people call it. In the different varieties of Berber, you can hear agjdur, ajdur, gishdur. I even heard my grandmother tell me a proverb in Arabic, but was saying gishdur, which is a little bit different. You can hear agdur too, for example. So it's the name of those screams and of these those women scratching their faces and tearing their clothes. In both languages, in Berber and in Moroccan Arabic, there was a verb, gajdur, meaning grieving, mourning, or to lament during someone's funeral, tearing clothes. So basically doing a gajdur. The thing is, in Morocco, the word is very, very old-fashioned. With one of my colleagues, we asked a lot of Moroccan Arabic native speakers nowadays in Morocco. For the most part, they never heard that word, agjdour. They don't know what that is. But the verb, they use it a lot, even if it has a different meaning today. You can hear, for example, today in Moroccan Arabic, eshkat gjdour, which means, what the hell are you doing? So, what agjdour are you doing? But they don't have in mind what agjdour is supposed to be. You can hear too, sirt gjdour, which means, go away, or roht gjdour, go fuck off. Sometimes the meaning can make us understand how this semantic shift did occur. From the screaming during a funeral to, what the hell are you doing? You can hear, for example, gjdour ala yami. Even that is a little bit old-fashioned, but that people know that.
Ayami meaning like woe on me, like woe on, you know, all the days that I've lived.
Yeah, exactly. Alayami is on my days, literally. So that means I cry on my past. I'm complaining. Gjdour. I feel nostalgic, but I know it's useless, and that's important to say that, because the fact that it's a complaint, a useless complaint, that's where it comes from, regarding the hysteria of the situations of the gjdour. So that meaning is very close, the meaning of gjdour alayami, to how it's used today in modern Hebrew. You can, for example, in peripheral Hebrew, you can hear stuffs like ani migjdour alayamim sheli, ani migjdour alavar sheli, which is basically the same thing. Alayamim sheli is exactly the same as alayami. Right. I'm complaining on my days. Alavar sheli, I'm complaining on my past. The Jewish Arabic dialects, the Judeo-Arabic dialects, that did already show archaic features, even in the 50s in Morocco, I mean, even before the migration, did freeze according to some aspect of the language and did evolve afterwards in Israel, disconnected from standard Moroccan Arabic. So sometimes they just kept old-fashioned expressions that are completely lost today in Moroccan Arabic. That's what happened with the old meaning of agjdour. So in those Jewish Arabic dialects, agjdour still means agjdour. Mm-hmm. And the noun, the substantive, still exists. And the verb, gjdour, really means to cry during a funeral. You can use that in Moroccan Jewish Arabic. If you use that in Morocco, it would be just basically doing something useless.
Once is it still in use in the Berber community, though? Do they still use gjdour?
Not everywhere. I think so, because I asked some speakers. That some of them told me, obviously, yes, we use that, and others never heard about it. So I'm not sure, but I'm not a specialist of the Berber languages.
Right.
So once in Israel, a new Hebrew verb was created. The verb is legajder, and a reflective form to late gajder, which actually is used the same way. Almost the same way. So in Hebrew, it means to lament, to complain. As in sentences I found on the internet, but I read in many articles, everyone uses the same sentences because that's the example that we do have. Kol hayom bachit v'gishdart alachayim shelach. You've been crying and complaining the whole day. Sometimes the verb means to get hysterical too.
Mm-hmm. And is it widespread enough in Israel now that if someone was to say, ani migashdev, or it's like, really has to be amongst people who are from that community, they would know what you're talking about.
That's really one of the rare examples of the verbs that really people really don't understand when they're not from that community. Even when I did my presentation last month, it was in front of lots of Israelis, and for the most part, they never heard it before.
And if somebody wanted to spell it, would they say, so Gimel Shin, or is it Gimel Zayin in like an apostrophe?
Yeah, Gimel Zayin in Geresh, Dalet Resh. Sometimes people say Legazder, but that's the pronunciation of Moroccan Jews, pronunciation right. Of Je. They do say Je.
And what is it, the sentence that you just said, is that the one that's used in the show?
What? No, in the show, it's a few times actually, I think twice in the first episode and then in the others, episode two. One of them is, Im at rotza legazder, gazderi bebayit shelach. If you want to gjdour in your own house. And that's interesting because they play with the meaning in the show. When you use that in Israeli Hebrew, it's supposed to mean if you want to lament, or if you want to get hysterical. But the scene of the show takes place during a funeral. So I think that the creator of the show wanted to explain where the word comes from. So right. It was a recontextualization. And that's a bit exaggerated because I don't think people can really use that way.
Right. And to go back to when those people first started immigrating to Israel, and how long did it take for them to stop speaking Arabic? Was it like pretty immediately within like one generation it was being phased out, or how did that work?
I think it depends. It's hard to answer that question. First, a small part didn't speak Arabic even when they did the migration. Some of them just spoke French, but it's not the largest part. About Arabic, even nowadays, it depends. On some families, nobody speaks Arabic anymore, and they even can laugh at you if you ask that, as if it was really weird to ask that kind of questions. No, of course, nobody speaks Arabic. And in other families, even the kids do understand Moroccan Arabic. So I don't really know. The thing is that it's a migration, even if the most part got there in the 50s, some of them, it was in the 60s and others in the 70s. So that's not the same. Right.
And when did you start researching this topic of Moroccan Arabic's influence on modern Hebrew?
Maybe 2 years ago, something like that. I've always been interested in those stuff. I've been studying and now teaching Moroccan Arabic, Moroccan Jewish Arabic, and Israeli Hebrew. So I always noticed those examples. I remember that when I 10 years ago, I was watching the Israeli reality show, Ach Gadol, your brother. And that's the very first time I heard the word. It was one of the candidates was saying "Al tit gashder alai" or something like that. And then in the show, really, another guy asked, "Can you explain that verb? Where does that come from?" And she just got pissed. And then she said, "If you don't understand that, just go learn Moroccan Arabic." And she did not explain that. So I didn't know the word. Actually, I knew the word in Arabic, but I didn't do the connection with lehit gashder. She used the reflexive Hebrew word. So maybe that was the first time I was interested in that topic.
And you traveled to Morocco to do part of your research?
Yes, but not on that topic. That would be in Israel.
Right.
To do that.
And when you're doing that, do you go to the remaining Jewish communities there, or where do you go primarily?
Mainly what I do now is that I work, that's specific. I work mainly on the social networks. I speak a lot with Moroccan Israelis from first, second, third, or fourth generations. And I just try to look at their conversations to pick some of those examples. And then I ask them, what did you mean when you used that? Is that your very initiative, or everyone uses that? And even if it's a very personal initiative, if people use an expression, he knows that people will understand that. So it still means something linguistically.
And what's next for you?
What's next for me? I don't know. I'm writing a lot on that topic. Actually, in 2 weeks, I'm supposed to go. I'm traveling, and I'll meet a team of Israeli researchers, maybe to talk about that, what they call Oriental Hebrew. So maybe I'll try to keep to work working on that.
Great. Well, it's been a joy to talk to you again after so long.
And
I look forward to doing it again. If people want to find you on Twitter, they can just search for Jonas Siboni.
Yeah.
You're always tweeting out really great stuff, just connecting ancient Hebrew with ancient Arabic, or modern Hebrew and modern Arabic, and making a lot of those connections that we've talked about today. So I encourage everybody to find you on Twitter and follow you, and look forward to speaking to you soon.
Yeah, me too. Thank you very much once more for having me today.
My pleasure.
Bye.